So welcome, everybody. Thanks for having me this afternoon. I don't have anything to disclose. For my talk today, I want to talk about a quality improvement learning collaborative for pediatric primary care providers that was designed to implement and sustain standardized mental health screening in primary care. And then I want to talk about some of the changes in mental health screening practices that followed the learning collaborative. So actually, Jesse really set the stage very nicely for what I'm going to talk about today, which is a little bit more drilled down version of some of the exact concepts that he was talking with us about. Jesse spoke about this, and so I won't repeat, and actually we have many of the same statistics, but I just want to point out, as all of you know, we're speaking to the choir, you know, child mental health conditions really impact home life, they impact school success, they impact relationships, and early identification and treatment are extremely beneficial, yet a majority of children are not being identified and they're not receiving services. And so this is a really critical issue for those of us in pediatrics and in child mental health. So, you know, pediatric primary care is actually a really promising and important place to deliver mental health services to kids. It's a place where children, it's a trusted environment where children have access to care, where they can receive care in a destigmatized way. The challenge is that clinical impression alone on the part of pediatric primary care providers and pediatricians fails to identify up to 50% of kids at risk for a mental health disorder. And so clinical impression alone by pediatricians is not a great way to identify kids who have mental and behavioral health concerns. That said, using standardized screening tools actually is a pretty good way to identify concerns. And the American Academy of Pediatrics has actually offered that up as a really important strategy for providers in identifying and treating children who have mental and behavioral health concerns. The challenge, though, is that these screening tools, while brief, and for those of you who are mental health providers, you'd think they were probably appallingly brief, they're difficult to integrate into the general clinic workflow when you have a very busy clinic. So this is a real challenge for pediatric providers. To give you a little bit of the local context of the Learning Collaborative I'm going to talk with you about, there was a recent requirement in Washington, D.C. by the our Department of Healthcare Finance, our Medicaid agency, by the Medicaid Managed Care Organizations for requiring that all clients, all patients receive an annual mental health screening using an approved standardized screening tool. Now this was, you know, age 0 to 100, but I'm a pediatrician, so we only focused on up to age 21. The second piece, which was important in the local context, was right about this time was the formation of the DC Collaborative for Mental Health and Pediatric Primary Care. We heard a tiny bit about this in our introduction, but this DC Collaborative, the collaborative we call it, is a multidisciplinary coalition that's designed to support the integration of mental health services into primary care citywide. It is a very multidisciplinary coalition, and it provided a lot of support to this project, including things like creating a resource guide of mental and behavioral health services, identifying funding for the project, identifying the experts for the project. So it did actually provide a fair amount of support to this project. So a quick overview of the Learning Collaborative. This project overview, this is a 16-month quality improvement learning collaborative for primary care practices serving children in DC and surrounding areas. It was really mostly targeted for Washington, D.C., but we did have practices from Maryland and Virginia who were interested in participating. We actually based our model, we worked with our local Children's National Health Network, who's run several very successful learning collaboratives on a variety of medical conditions such as obesity and asthma. They've developed a model where they use a web-based platform called QI TeenSpace, and they also use quality improvement coaches to work with practices through these learning collaboratives, and had actually really shown in a number of projects really nice significant improvements. And so this was the model that we used for our learning collaborative as well. There were two phases to the learning collaborative. The first round was from February to October in 2014. That was actually where we initially planned to stop, but many of the practices enrolled actually asked us to continue, and so we found a little funding and we kept on going. Round two was January to June 2015, and we took a little mental health break, as they say, between November and December, and we provided some technical assistance during that time, but we didn't have any scheduled project activities. We did. Your practices did not have to participate in both rounds. Most practices, as I'll show you in a second, did participate in both. However, we did offer it up for new practices to join us in round two, and we gave them a little mental health screening crash course to get them caught up. The project did qualify for American Board of Pediatric and American Board of Family Medicine Maintenance of Certification Part 4 credit, which, for those of you who may not know, that was a real carrot for providers. And it also qualified for continuing medical education credits for actually all of our project activities, including our quality improvement activities. So the aims of the project were to increase practice readiness, to implement and sustain mental health screening at well visits using a standardized tool, and to increase the number of well visits where a mental health screen is administered, documented, addressed, and billed. So we had over either or both rounds, 16 practices across the city enrolled. 14 of those were from DC, so you can see it was really predominantly DC practices, which was our target. There were 10 practices who were enrolled in both rounds, one and two. This is the group that we're gonna look at today with the data that I'm gonna show you. Six of those practices were community health centers that were affiliated with one of two academic health centers. There were two federally qualified health centers and two private practice pediatric offices enrolled in the collaborative. So just as a quick project overview, and we called it Plan Do Study Act as opposed to Plan Do Check Act, but still same concept of rapid cycle quality improvement, but there were a couple components. So first, we had web-based monthly team leader calls and monthly learning sessions. Practices were required to also have monthly on-site practice team meetings and do monthly chart audits. Each participating practice was also asked and required to identify areas for improvement and do three short rapid cycle PDSA cycles during each round of the learning collaborative. We also, and I think this is a really important part of the project, and I'll talk about that in a moment, but we did also provide on-site and virtual support from mental health and quality improvement coaches through the project. So you don't have to read this, but this is just our project map to give you a sense of, we were a little obsessive compulsive about the structure. So there were two kind of main areas that we measured. The first was practice readiness. And this is practice readiness to perform mental health screening and otherwise provide integrated mental health care. We used a tool called the AAP Mental Health Practice Readiness Inventory, which is a really just an inventory developed by Expert Consensus. And we thought that would be a good way to provide sort of quantifiable documentation of a practice's sort of readiness to provide mental health services that we could track through the project. It's a four-page self-assessment, and you can see the domains here, but they range from things like financing, community resources, clinician support, so it's a wide variety of domains. So here are the results from the practice readiness surveys. We had practices complete this at the beginning of the project, the end of round one, and then again at the end of round two. It is important to point out, three is we do not do this well, one is we do this well, so low is good. So this is the direction that we want to see the graph going in. But you can see that overall practices actually really sort of showed increased readiness and comfort in caring for kids with mental and behavioral health concerns through the course of the project. And that's consistent across all the individual domains, but also for an overall average. So the second area that we measured was mental health screening and mental health screening rates. We looked at both the percentage of well visits in which an approved screening tool was administered, but the percentage of the times the screening tool was administered that there was an actual score in the chart. And we also looked at sort of compliance with the billing recommendations. So, you know, our chart audit, it is important to point out this was completed by our provider. So, it was completed by our provider. So here are our results. So this first one looks at just sort of overall rates of mental health screening through the course of the project. And I apologize, these are a little small, but you can, I think, hopefully see the trend here. You know, we started our measurements in May because we spent the first 3 months of the Learning Collaborative really helping practices get ready to start screening, and we did not actually ask them to start screening until May. So that's when we started our data measurement. But you can see at baseline, pretty much nobody was doing any mental health screening. So there was like one or two here and there. So we could only go up, which was a good thing for a quality improvement project. But we pretty rapidly saw really nice and relatively sustained increases in mental health screening rates at well visits through the course of the project. And then this top line here is the percentage of screens that had a score documented in the chart. So actually, overall practices did very well with that from the beginning. So this slide looks at our findings related to the requirements for billing for mental health screening. We thought this was really important to include in the project because if providers were going to go through the work of doing it, we'd want to make sure that it was sustainable for them. Similarly to the mental health screening rates, you can see the use of the recommended CPT code to bill for mental health screens was a little bit slow to start, but actually relatively quickly practices got the hang of that and started doing that. That was actually, this billing piece was an early PDSA cycle for many of our practices. The second billing component was not as successful. This TS modifier is a modifier that our Department of Healthcare Finance asked us or recommended to be started using in October of 2014. It was something new that was actually designed just by our state Medicaid agency, and so providers had a lot of confusion over it, and I think that's clearly reflected in the low rates of use for the TS modifier. It's also, we didn't start measuring this until the second round because it wasn't even something in existence until the second round. So the other piece that we did look at a little bit, you know, this wasn't a formal measure in our Learning Collaborative, but we did hear going into the project from a lot of providers that they were concerned about the impact screening would have on their practice and on their workflow. And so we tried to sort of track a few things that would help us make sure practices weren't identifying an undue number of children with mental and behavioral health concerns that they didn't have the time or the resources to treat. You know, a couple things, you know, you can see the average patient age of the screening was you know, between 7 and 9 years of age. About 10% of kids had a previously identified mental health issue in the patient's record even before the screening. And then this actually is kind of the interesting chart here. This is the percentage of positive or at-risk screens, this purple line. It's sort of layered on top of these little graphs, which is the percentage of well visits which had a mental health screen. So you see early on we actually had pretty high rates of positive screens as compared to sort of lower rates of screening. But it actually sort of through the course of the project settled out to around 25-ish%, which is really just a bit higher than the rates reported in the literature. Our hypothesis really is that early on practices were not doing universal screening and that they were giving more screens to kids who they thought had mental and behavioral health concerns. So we don't know for sure that that's the case, but that is our hypothesis. And I did not put these charts up here, but we did actually conduct balancing measures through the course of the project where we asked providers and practices things like, does this have a negative impact on your work, or what kind of impact does this have on your workflow? Do you spend too much time, not enough time? And in general, actually really overall practices reported very little overall impact on their workflow and actually reported really increased comfort in dealing with issues related to mental and behavioral health concerns. So despite the concerns, practices actually and providers did pretty well with this. So, and I'm very close to the end, so I'm just going to show you a couple quick things. So the first is, you know, we wanted to sort of verify some of what we were finding in the overall Learning Collaborative, which was really self-reported chart audit. And so we actually looked at several of our sites. This is just one of them. But we looked at our sites that had embedded the mental health screening into their electronic medical record so that we could actually sort of pull just universal data and screening rates. So this is one of our biggest sites, and you can see that their pattern of mental health screening really pretty closely mirrors what we were seeing in our overall Learning Collaborative. So that was kind of reassuring to us that the data we were getting from self-report was at least reasonably reliable. So there were a couple limitations, of course, to this project. This was not a, this was not a randomized control trial. This was not an experimental design. It was a quality improvement project, and so you should take it as such. The data was all self-reported and certainly may not be generalizable to other settings, though we did actually see similar improvements across sort of academic centers, federally qualified health centers, and private practices. That said, we were in an urban setting that has pretty strong infrastructure, and we did have some significant resources to bring to the project, which other places may not have. So despite these limitations, we actually think that this is reassuring that primary care practices can improve their readiness to address mental health issues with targeted and ongoing support, that quality improvement projects can be an effective way to implement and sustain screening, and that longitudinal and comprehensive practice support was key to the support of the project. And I actually think this last piece is one of the most important pieces to make sure that funders and Medicaid managed care and all of those who really want to encourage mental health screening in primary care practices, which is a good thing, but I think understanding that practices really do need help and support in making that happen. So thank you to my village who helped make this happen, and I don't think we have time for questions. So.